Everyone will stand. I will read the scripture verse. It's Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 39 through 40. Now therefore this day, know therefore this day, and consider it in thy heart, that he is Yahweh, the Lord, he is God, in heaven above and upon the earth beneath. There is none else. Thou shalt keep therefore his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee this day, that it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee, and that thou mayest prolong thy days upon the earth, which the Lord thy God giveth thee forever. You may be seated. This past week, there was a variety of things to discuss. Every week there is. The first one I was going to completely ignore. But after looking at it, I realized that it was very important. As a result of the research, here is what I found. The second Women's March in Cincinnati, sponsored by United We Stand. It was on the anniversary of Donald J. Trump's presidency. Thousands of people marched Saturday. That was January the 20th of this year. In the streets of Cincinnati to denounce his views and to denounce his administration. The marchers gathered at noon outside the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center for the second Cincinnati Women's March organized by United We Stand. Participants walked along to the beat of songs like Aretha Franklin's Respect, while chants such as, "We need a leader, not a creepy tweeter." I thought that was pretty good. filled the air. Shouted refrains include, "Love, not hate, makes America great." And, "Love, not fear, everybody's welcome here." Signs raised high into the sky displayed messages such as, "Our rights are not up for grabs. I will not go quietly back to 1950. And my outrage cannot fit on this sign." There we got a picture of Ansley Crutcher, 8, of Marymount. Poses for a portrait with her sign, the Cincinnati Women's March, downtown. It says, "Though she be but little, she is fierce." Donna Belletner of Sens Township and Molly Fitzmarkle, terrible names, Fitzmarkle of Loveland, both had traveled to the Women's March in Washington, D.C. last year. Now I'm going to quote the first lady, Donna. "I have 3 daughters. I march for them and a better world," she said. "Here we are again, fighting for our daughters, our rights, but more so our daughters' rights as women," unquote. I have a few little comments. Does she think that murdering her child in her womb is the right of her daughters? Does she think that become an abomination to the Lord God of the Bible, that is, to become a lesbian, is her daughter's right? Does she think that is her daughter's right to become a feminist? Does she think it is her daughter's right to marry anyone of any race? Does she think it is her daughter's right to produce grandchildren for her who are mongrels? Just a few little questions. Look at the following photographs and magazine covers and tell me if it's her daughter's right to advocate this behavior. National Geographic. I think it's May 2017. Black guy and a white girl. Evolution, Europe. And they got four articles over here. I'll tell you what those are. You need to know what those articles are. That was just a graphic. I couldn't believe that one. Then the next one's from Barbara Spector. Used to be a U.S. congressman. She's now in Sweden. Here's a quote from her. Europe has not yet learned how to be multicultural. And I think we are going to be part of the throes of that transformation, which must take place. Europe is not going to be monolithic societies that they once were in the first century. One God. Jews are going to be at the center of that. It's a huge transformation for Europe to make. They are now going into a multicultural mode, and who will? Jews. And Jews will be resented because of our leading role. But without that leading role and without that transformation, Europe will not survive. That's what Barbara says. Who is responsible for Europe's multiculturalism? Well, she tells you. Jews. If you don't believe them, if you don't believe me, believe them. Now, here is a Jewish activist, Susan Sontag. Look at this. The white race is the cancer of human history. Next. Professor Noel, all these names I can't. Noel, a negative. Harvard Magazine, 2002. Here, I think he's a Jewish guy. Quote, the goal of abolishing the white race, that means no more white people. The goal of abolishing the white race is on its face so desirable that some may find it hard to believe that it could incur any opposition other than from committed white supremacists. Make no mistake about it. We intend to keep bashing the dead white males and the live ones and the females too until the social construct known as the white race is destroyed. Unquote. The Jews are behind what is going on in the white nations of the world. They say so. Multiculturalism, with the goal of abolishing the white race, is one of the Pharisees' chief goals. Is the white race the cancer of human history? And Barbara Spector, as well as the cover of the National Geographic, tells of what the Jews are doing in Europe, particularly in Sweden. Did you notice some of the articles that were published in this issue of National Geographic that were highlighted on the cover? One of them was Winning the War Against Racism. Another article, Cultural Identity Myths. The third one must be a very short article. The Benefits of Biracial Children. Democrats wanted to pass legislation to provide a path forward to citizenship for an estimated 700,000 DACA recipients, while Trump wanted Republicans to put language into the deal to help fund his border wall. Now I've got another picture. I think you should look at some of these signs. Your power is your vote. Fiona is female. Nevertheless, she persisted. Patriotism over profit. It's Mueller time. Impeach. I'm sure someone made that sign up. It was And the headline, the thing said, thousands participated in Cincinnati's Women's March. The attendance stepped off from the Freedom Center just after 1:30 Saturday. And the march taking them north on Race Street and back to the Freedom Center via Vine Street. Jenny Southgate of Covington didn't attend last year's march, but she wanted to protest the Trump administration's views towards women and minorities. And here's the quote from Jenny Southgate. "I don't care about the Democratic agenda. I really don't," Southgate said. "I'm much more interested in making sure that the people's voices are heard. Men, women, gay, straight, I don't care. Equal protection under the law is not happening, and I hope that we move in that protection," unquote. To the paper. I have a little quote. "If God says that it's an abomination to him to have homosexuals prancing around in his kingdom, what should we say? Should we not care? Do gay lesbians and transvestites have equal protection under God's law?" Let's look at Leviticus 18, verses 22 through 24. "Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination. Neither shalt thou lie with any beast, two-legged or four-legged, any beast to defile thyself therewith. Neither shall any stand before a beast to lie down thereto. It is confusion." That's Babylon, bad confusion. "Defile not ye yourselves in any of these things, for in all these the nations are defiled, which I cast out before you." What nations were defiled that God cast out before the Hebrews in Leviticus? It was the Amorites. They were defiled, they were doing this, and he cast them out. Another picture. Notice the flag. The future is female. Love over hate. Make America think again. Well, here's a good one. I stand with Planned Parenthood. I have a comment about this. Are we, the white nations, practicing what the Amorites were doing when the Hebrews were led out of Egypt in the Exodus? The answer is yes. Are we defiling ourselves like all the nations that God cast out were defiled? We certainly are. In fact, we might be passing them up. Were the Amorites committing sodomy? Were they murdering infants? Were they practicing interracial marriages? Were they bowing down to idols? You better believe they were. Will this, as the woman marchers advocate, be a, quote, better world, unquote, if they get their way? Now back to the newspaper. It says marchers were joined by performers, including the rhythm dancers, the Dance Flash Fusion, Muse, the Cincinnati Women's Choir, and I don't know what this is, Black Seeds, Ozzy Love, and Sira Amani. At the stage, keynote speaker Sandy Thies, executive director of Progress Ohio, and grassroots advocate Portia Bolger energized the vast crowd. Representatives from Women Helping Women, Interfaith Hospitality Network of Greater Cincinnati, and former Cincinnati City Council candidates Leslie Jones and Michelle Dillingham also spoke. I must say a few more words about this Women's March. It was sponsored by United We Stand. Well, I said, what is United We Stand organization and what do they believe? So to find out, what did I do? I Googled. I Googled and read their website. United We Stand in Cincinnati is committed to the National Women's March on Washington, NWMW, agenda. As an officially recognized sister organization to the National Women's March on Washington, we will continue to participate in their strategies and actions. The mission and vision of United We Stand. Number one, we are committed to human rights for all. We affirm women's rights as human rights, reproductive freedom, equal pay for equal work, affordable housing, free public education. There was a candidate that said that one. Bernie Sanders. Affordable child care, health care and parental leave. We support lesbian, gay, bisexual, transversite, what's that, queer rights. They support Planned Parenthood. The Equal Rights Amendment, whatever that is, CEDAW Convention of the United Nations. Two, committed to grassroots organizing. Our strength is in the number of people we can mobilize for human rights issues. And we want to be our continued, and that to be our continued focus, not in building administrative infrastructure. Three, committed to supporting human rights efforts, spearheaded by Greater Cincinnati social justice organizations, doing excellent work in championing human rights. We support them and do not compete with them. We will attempt to act as a sharing space for information regarding human rights advocacy or activism in Greater Cincinnati. Four, committed to supporting the efforts of communities of color and other minorities. We want to show up for them and help them in ways they define. Five, we are committed to being nonpartisan, non-party affiliated. The mission of human rights for all supersedes any one candidate, election cycle, or party affiliation. We will support issues, not candidates and politicians. And the sixth, we are committed to Kingian nonviolence. We believe the realization of Dr. King's idea of the beloved community can be made manifest if we strive for the inclusion of as many groups and individuals as possible, supporting all to achieve full enfranchisement. Of course, King was a communist. They don't say that. This is the mission and vision of the organization that sponsored the Women's March in Cincinnati. There were women's marches held in many U.S. cities as well as cities throughout the world. Now their insignia, United We Stand. People here, city, people here. Stronger together. Peaceful, passionate, progressive. My view, the people who support United We Stand are in favor of the murder of children in the womb. They're in favor of the homosexual, gay, lesbian, transvestite activities, including same-sex marriages. They're in favor of human rights. They're in favor of minority rights. They're in favor of love, not hate. And they're in favor of destroying all biblical knowledge to the covenant people of God, and so forth. They're all for love. They don't hate anyone or anything. They love someone who rapes their daughter. They love someone who makes love with the same sex. They love the person who robs their homes. They love someone who willfully murders their family member. No one should hate anyone or anybody. They love someone who has a different religious belief than they hold, except for white supremacists. That is their philosophy. Notice the insignia of their representative contact information. The upside down broken cross, the sign of the Antichrist. Here it is, right there. Now, in the JesusIsSavior.com website, it tells its readers that this symbol is known as the peace sign. Throughout the 60s and into the present day, this symbol is the Teutonic rune of death. 1950s peace advocate Gerald Holtram may have been commissioned by communist sympathizer Bertrand Russell to design a symbol to unite leftist peace marchers in 1958. Either Holtram or Russell deemed the Teutonic Neuronic Cross as the appropriate symbol for their cause. You see this symbol all throughout the clothing industry. Here's a quote from the JesusTheSavior.com website. Throughout the last 2,000 years, this symbol, the peace sign, has designated hatred of Christians. Nero, who despised Christians, crucified the Apostle Peter on a cross, head downward. This hideous event resembled a Teutonic cross and became a popular pagan insignia of the day. Thereafter, this sign became known as the Neuronic Cross. United We Stand means united with the women of the colored races to stand against the things that the Lord God commanded his people to hate, such as abortion, homosexuality, feminism, integration, idolatry, and so forth. These are the things that the Amorites were doing that defiled them. God tells us not to defile ourselves, but the Jewish communist agitators are trying hard to destroy our nation and nations. Other events that happened this week. The federal government shutdown. The Democrats blame the Republicans. The Republicans blame the Democrats. Same old, same old. It came to an end on Monday, to be continued in about 3 weeks. The Democrats thinking about running Oprah Winfrey for president 2020. I imagine that 95% of the women in the Women's March in Cincinnati would vote for Oprah Winfrey. She is such a good candidate. She is biracial, anti-Christian, and is a multi-billionaire. She is like Meghan Markle, the American biracial actress who is the future bride of Prince Harry. The biracial element is sweeping the world. And then, the German court convicting a grandma to 14 months in jail for denying the Jewish Holocaust. What? She is 89 years old. And she was first sentenced to 8 months in jail in 2016 after she claimed Auschwitz was not a concentration camp in a letter to a mayor of one of the towns in Germany. Then, after she passed out pamphlets entitled, "Only the Truth Will Set You Free," during the appeal session, she was given an additional 10 months of imprisonment. This made 18 months of jail time, but that was reduced to 14 months. She must be one heck of a woman. If she went to jail now, she'd be 91 years old when she gets out of confinement. She and her late husband were members of the Nazi Party during the Second World War. The two of them founded a now banned educational center. And she has written for a right-wing magazine where she has argued that the Holocaust never happened. She has been convicted on five other occasions for similar charges of incitement of racial hatred. But she has remained free as her lawyers appealed. Her lawyers plan on taking the case to a top regional court for final appeal in the jail term. I got a picture of her. Her name is Ursula Haverbeck, dubbed the Nazi Grandma, is yet to go to jail. Under German law, Holocaust denial constitutes a crime and carries a sentence of up to 5 years in jail. Come now, and let us reason together, saith Yahweh. In Germany and other white nations, it is against their laws for anyone to deny the Jewish Holocaust. I will just say, the Holocaust is all wrong. For anyone to do so, they would be put in jail. They claim they would incite racial hatred. Let's see, that would be racial hatred against whom? And were these the same people who do not want any more hatred shed on them, whether it is correct or not? And the same people who were kicked out of the cities, the villages, the states, and countries of most of Europe? But what is the jail sentence if you deny the resurrection of Jesus the Christ? What is your jail sentence if you deny that Jesus even existed? And what is your jail sentence if you deny that Jesus was the Son of God and that he's now in hell boiling in a hot cauldron? Now tell me, which is most important? The three questions about Jesus the Christ or the Jewish Holocaust? Now we'll get back to the book of Deuteronomy. Moses instructs his people on his final day of life that the Lord is the only God in heaven and in earth, and there can be no other. If Moses was the lawyer for the Nazi grandma, he would argue that the three questions above, that was about Jesus the Christ, are capital offenses in the white nations. For they are related to the first commandment that was given in the Ten Commandments. Hear, O Germany, Deuteronomy 5, verses 6 and 7. I am the Lord thy God, who brought thee out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. There's only one God, and he has given his love and chose our fathers and Jacob's seed. And this seed is instructed that the most important thing that they can do is to be obedient in keeping God's holy laws. For example, Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 41 through 43. Then Moses severed three cities on this side Jordan toward the sun rising, that the slayer might flee thither, which should kill his neighbor unawares, and hated him not in times past, and that fleeing into one of these cities he might live, namely Bezar in the wilderness, in the plain country of the Reubenites, and Ramoth in Gilead of the Gadites, and Golan in Bashan of the Manassites. The three cities of refuge were not for any purposeful murder. It was for an accidental homicide. Now we got a map. They had six cities altogether in Israel. Three on this side of the Jordan River and three on this side. Now right now they're on this side of the Jordan River. Bezer, which became the tribe of Reuben. Ramoth, the tribe of Gad, and Golan, the tribe of East Manasseh. Later, Hebron, Shechem. Oh, we studied about Shechem, haven't we? And Kadesh, six cities and all of Israel. What if a person committed a willful homicide and fled to a city of refuge? Was he safe? Well, let's see. Deuteronomy chapter 19, verses 11 through 13. But if any man hate his neighbor and lie in wait for him and rise up against him and smite him mortally that he die and fleeth into one of these cities. So he kills someone, flees to one of the six cities. Then the elders of his city shall send and fetch him thence and deliver him into the hand of the avenger of blood that he may die. So no, if you kill someone on purpose, if you willingly murder someone, thine eyes shall not pity him, but thou shalt put away the guilt of the innocent blood from Israel, that it may go well with thee. The person who committed the act of murder on purpose was to be killed. The city of refuge was not his refuge. The elders of his city shall fetch him and deliver him into the hand of the avenger of blood, and the friend of the murder victim shall execute him. There was to be shown no pity for him. It didn't matter whose son that he was, whether he was the offspring of a rich man, or a priest, or a poor man, or a baker. He was to be executed. No bribes, no favors, no pity, no mercy. And the book of Joshua gives us some more information. Joshua chapter 20, verses 1 through 9. The Lord also spoke unto Joshua, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, appoint out for your cities a refuge, whereof I spoke unto you by the hand of Moses, that the slayer that killeth any person unawares and unwittingly may flee thither, and they shall be for your refuge from the avenger of blood. And when he have doth flee unto one of these cities, shall stand at the entering of the gate of the city, and shall declare his cause in the ears of the elders of that city. They shall take him into the city unto them, and give him a place that he may dwell among them. And if the avenger of blood pursued after him, then they shall not deliver the slayer up into his hand, because he smote his neighbor unwittingly, and hated him not before time. And he shall dwell in that city until he stand before the congregation for judgment, and until the high priest that shall be in those days. Then the slayer returned and come into his own city, and into his own house, and into the city where he fled. And they appointed Kadesh in Galilee to Mount Naphtali, and Shechem in Mount Ephraim, and Kirjabara, which is Hebron, in the mountain of Judah. And on the other side of Jordan, by Jericho eastward, was assigned Bezer in the wilderness, upon the plain of the tribe of Reuben, and Ramoth and Gilead, the tribe of Gad, and Golan and Bashan of the tribe of Manasseh. These were the cities appointed for all the children of Israel, and the stranger that sojourneth among them, that whosoever killeth any person at unawares might flee thither, and not die by the hand of the avenger of blood, until he stood before the congregation. If a person was innocent of willful murder, he was supposed to go to one of the six cities of refuge. He would then explain his situation to the elders of the city. If they approved of his innocence, he was to dwell in that city until the high priest died. Man, his death, if you were living, you could, what if you lived 50 more years? What if you lived 2 days? Man, great anticipation. If the avenger of blood showed up at the refuge city, you're there, avenger of blood comes. He was kept away from the slayer, but the slayer had to go in front of the congregation. If the congregation found him innocent, then he had to remain in that city of refuge until after the death of the high priest. After that, he could go home and resume his former life. If he left the city of refuge any time before the time of the death of the high priest, the avenger of blood could kill him, and he would be free of any punishment. Numbers 35 gives more details on this issue. It tells us of the six cities, three on each side of the Jordan, for refuge for any person who kills a person accidentally. These six cities shall be cities of refuge from the avenger, that is, the manslayer die not, until he first stands before the congregation in judgment. These shall be for Israelites, for racial strangers. That word strangers that I read was racial strangers. And for all sojourners among them, that any man who kills another accidentally may flee for protection. If a man slays another by an instrument of iron, or by throwing a stone, or by a weapon of wood, then he's a murderer. He shall surely be put to death. But if a man kills another accidentally, without hatred or malice, and without lying in wait for him, regardless of how the accident occurred, then the congregation shall judge between the slayer and the revenger of blood in justice. The congregation shall deliver him out of the hand of the revenger of blood and restore him to the city of his refuge where he has fled. The man shall stay in the city of refuge until the death of the high priest. But if the avenger of blood at any time shall find the slayer outside the city of refuge and its suburbs, he may slay him, because the slayer should have remained in the refuge city until the death of the high priest. After the death of this official, the slayer shall return to his home in the land of his possession. Well, there's a lot more to this, but you get the idea. What does United We Stand say about all these laws that God gave to his covenant people? What if a person is involved in an accidental two-car crash that kills the innocent person driving in the other car? In God's law, the person can only live if he flees to a refuge city and stay there until the death of a high priest. If he leaves for any reason, the avenger of blood can kill him with no penalty. But if the person kills another willingly, he is put to death by the avenger. There's no prison time of any length. They would only be in prison until the trial. It would make no difference if the person was wealthy or poor. There'd be no amount of money that could bribe the judge or judges. And this brings up a great difference between God's law and the law in the United States. In fact, is the prison system the right way to punish criminals? In Kentucky, we have 24,600 offenders in prison at a cost of $576 million a year. The prison population is expected to grow by another 4,400 beds over the next decade, adding an extra $500 million in correction costs. Now, this brings up something else that happened last week. Larry Nassar, this past week, was sentenced to 60 years in prison on child pornography charges and 40 to 175 years for molesting three girls, and is awaiting sentence next week on three counts of criminal sexual conduct. What in the world for? What is he going to get? What if he is sentenced to 300 years of jail time? Is that love or is that hate? God's law doesn't put anyone in a prison sentence. If he steals, he must pay restitution, twice the amount that he stole. This way, the victim gets some benefit out of the tragedy. And the society does not have to pay for the prisoner's upkeep while in jail. What if he doesn't have the money to pay twice the amount that he stole? He becomes the slave of the person that he robbed until he works off the amount that he owes him. What if he doesn't want to be a slave? He is executed by the authorities. Now, which system of laws is better? Which one is based on love and which one is based on hate? To be continued, blessed be the Lord God of Israel.